Malo elelei, tēnā koe, kia ora John. Whakamole mole, thank you for being here and having a kōrero with me this morning. It's an honour to be able to hold this time and space with you. A little background to the man who's sitting next to me. John Vere works with sculpture, video and performance art. He is a lecturer out at Islam School of Fine Arts, the University of Canterbury. He has previously lectured up at Auckland University of Technology, teaching undergraduate papers in the Faculty of Design and Creative Technologies. In 2021, John completed his practice-led PhD also at Auckland University of Technology, titled Exploring Pacific Talanoa Research Methods in Visual Art, Installation and Performance Art Practice, which I have been diligently studying this week. In his academic research, John has developed interests in how Pacific artists practice, operate in the context of visual arts and fine arts. Performance art is one of his prime expertise, and he's interested in exploring how second or third generation Pacific creatives respond to space and politics from a limbo-liminal perspective and in relation to tangata whenua. He champions the advancement of Pacific-orientated pedagogies and knowledge systems, such as Talanoa, as a way of research. The man, John Vere, tēnā koe. So, we had a little plan this morning that we were discussing earlier this week. It was to tell some stories together about your mahi to Talanoa, around the theme of belonging in relation to the exhibition Homing Instinct. We're going to focus on two works which we'll walk around. She shows this aina with her younger siblings, yet she cannot inherit the same aina made in 2017. And Concrete Is as Concrete Doesn't, made in 2017. Over the course of the conversation, I'd like us to gather a few little definitions. One of the definitions would be Talanoa. I'd like you to build it up for me. And the second definition would be the sense of belonging or home that runs through your work. To start with, at the beginning of your PhD, I was pretty taken back by your grandfather's song which he composed. That's Funga o Ngā Taka, also known as Sione.
Yep.
And it was part of the work. She sews this aina with her younger siblings, yet she cannot inherit the same aina, which we can see in this image on the TV up here.
I saw it with my grandfather. I guess in terms of like his involvement in my practice, I used to work at a Carlton party hire place, which is like a rental for cutlery, party stuff. And it was based out in Kingsland. And it was operated in a factory, an old factory. And it used to be Kiwi Bacon. And so I found out later on through my mother, he used to work there. And so it was quite interesting in terms of seeing all the rails for pig carcasses around the building, and I'm working at the same space as my grandfather used to, but the storage or the fridges, the old fridges, were storage for cutlery and plates, and so that was a unique discovery in terms of my practice and to do with like generational learning or existence in spaces. And so that's my introduction to him. He's a musician. I've only known him as a musician, and my grandfather with long pants, aloha shirt, and his guitar case. And I used to go with him to his gigs, but not in the usual sense that you guys think gigs are. It's like in a cover sitting in the ground, and there'd be a group here, a group in the corner, like a group, you know, different groups of cover circles. And most of the circles will have a band playing in their particular circle. And so I used to go to those gigs with him, and he used to run throughout the night. And my mother would get pissed off because we'd come home late or early hours in the morning, and she would like grill my grandfather. But it was, yeah, that was my experience with him. And so that's, I guess, a preface to this work. This work was in response, the black screen was in response to my two-week residency or research residency in Honolulu, Waianae. I went over, and I guess you apply these kind of ethical rules to yourself. You're going over to just learn and not apply or not make work critiquing the space. And that was my mindset going over there. And I don't know if any other artists have experienced this, is that you go over there and you go, you see all these nice things and things in relation to ideas that you're interested in, and you kind of fall into the trap of, I want to make work. There's this Dole cannery over there in Hawaii, and I pitched it to Nahiraka, who was the mason, who was the director or co-director with Fumi at the time, and she told me off. And she goes, John, oh, she's like an auntie to me. She goes, John, you're not from here, you got to remember that. And so you can't make work in response to these spaces here because you're not from here. And I knew that. And so I went back home and I applied what I've learned in the spaces in Hawaii and reflected it from a positioning where I live or where I've experienced these issues. And so going back home, learning about blood percentages of Hawaii and being able to live in these kind of, what do you call it? There are spaces for them to live, and you have to have a certain percentage of blood or DNA, Hawaiian DNA, to be able to qualify to live in these spaces. And so I took that story that I've learned in Hawaii and took it back with me to Aotearoa and applied it to how these laws of occupying land or being able to live in these spaces apply to me. And so I applied it to my mother's perspective, where land ownership is an issue in terms of in the Tongan context. Here, this work is in response to my mother's situation with owning land in Tonga. And it still stands to this day. The law, female still cannot own or inherit land in Tonga. And so she bypassed she found an avenue to still own the land, and she put it under my name as I'm the eldest son. And so she's the eldest daughter out of three of her siblings, with all female. And so she's passed it down to me. Make sense? And so I made work in response to that. And during the time I'm in researching and creating this work, a relative of mine, who's a distant relative, male dude, he wanted to claim the land, and he's far down the line in terms of ownership towards land or having claim to the land. And then there's this battle between the two, my mother and him, an uncle from Australia, wanting to lay claim. And so I made the work in response to that. And so this is a very complex work in terms of the elements are involved, and it's the first time I've made work that's quite complex, and a lot of elements have been involved in this. And so I formatted it as a real estate sign in reference to housing here. And on the bottom of the sign, or the real estate sign, is the deed, the actual deed to the land, or my grandfather's land. And up top is a moving image work following a female who's in the same situation with my mother, and she's the eldest in her line, and she would have to compete with her father's land with her younger siblings, and her younger siblings are boys, and so they would end up being next in line to claim land. Where the work is filmed is the land that my mother owns here in Aotearoa, and so there's that kind of
irony.
Yeah. She could own land in Aotearoa or in a foreign place, but yet she cannot own land, hence the title. She cannot own land in her own home. And then the song that's playing, if you play it, you don't have to. It's but it's my grandfather's song, or grandfather's band song, which is called, which you alluded to, is Funga Onetaka. But yeah, that's a long roundabout way to explain the work. And so that's how the work came about. Again, storytelling and connections through my grandfather and working in the same space and then influencing this work and applying those experiences into this. And this was the outcome. Was there anything else?
Should we have a look at the work?
Mm. Is this an excerpt? Excerpt. Ah. So they're playing this eggs in a basket game. And I've always considered it as like a real competitive game. I did it when I was training rugby training. You do it as kids when you're learning how to play footy. But I like how it was serious and then this fun game, and then it ends up in a somber kind of thing. And it was intentional. Just to show, you know, family issues and family quabbles often start as fun or family gatherings. And so that's the reason why. Questions? It's the Tongan government. It's and so I made it up. And so Burianga o Tonga is government of Tonga. And I was playing on Barfoot and Thompson. Rob George. Those of you who know Robert George, he helped me film this, just to acknowledge, and my cousins. Yeah. In terms of, yeah, I mean, it's ever since I grew up, I've always been, that's why I talked about being in limbo. It's usually a negative connotation and for people that belong in two spaces. I don't know, you didn't cover it. Like, in terms of, like, you get called out. Over here, I don't belong. And over there, I don't belong. In terms of the names they call you. You know, Tamasi'i Mori in Tonga is foreign boy. Over here, growing up, you go, oh, you're Pacific. And so that's always been. But, I've kind of used it as avenues of privilege, really. Like, I'm blessed to look in two spaces or two pathways in terms of it. But that's why I kind of wrapped what limbo is in the PhD thesis. It's a privilege to look at those two avenues from two cultural contexts, New Zealand and Tonga, or Aotearoa and Tonga. Does that answer your question? Yeah, it's a way of negotiating things. And it gave me a format or ethical approach, not just from Aotearoa and Tonga, but also applying it to other spaces. When I go overseas, I always make sure that I care. And it's not usually the case. And sometimes others don't really see it as care. But you get caught out on it sometimes. And you just look down and just listen for me. And so that's how I kind of approached everything, is through that avenue. And also position the politics that I've learned overseas. And the issues around claiming land or social commentary, that's always applied from a context of where I'm from or where I position myself as an ethical approach.
Going to the definition of Talanoa, and if I read what you'd written, it was, in a Pacific framework, Talanoa is generally described as a face-to-face exchange of words. Between my grandfather and me, Talanoa was conducted and a learning through seeing capacity. Even though nothing was said on my part, my role in this exchange was not simply observational.
Hmm.
You still hold true?
Yes.
Can you expand on that?
Well, Talanoa is, I guess, in the English translation as conversation, but I see it more than that. I see it as a way of life for me, and it's being it, if that makes sense. And so an example is I don't have a website to talk about my practice on my behalf. I'd rather do it in this kind of context or face-to-face. And it's a better thing for me to share my practice and while others listen physically and share the ambience and whatever's happening around us. And it's a more organic way of communicating about my practice, and you get it from the source. And it might change throughout the different iterations I explain it. Like, definitely this explanation of that works not the same as I explained it the other time. And so it's always unique. And so Talanoa for me is a way of life, a way of communicating things to others in a very physical experience. Because I grew up with it. And so it's a learning pedagogical thing for me. I've learnt through my grandfather, watching him work, watching him talking to me, explaining about things. And so he's shown me how to trim or plant or weed through doing. And so for me, that's a learning through a practical sense. And so that's I apply that in the same context of sharing my practice in these kind of settings where it's from the horse's mouth.
Why did you choose that particular song in the work from your grandfather?
I asked my mother. I have a playlist of the band's called Funga Onitaka, and it's a term called the silver sands that wash up onto the place that we live in Tonga. And so at a certain time, the sand is silver. For some reason, there's these kind of there's something happening with the sand, and so it turns, and so they named the band that. And I asked my mother if I was to apply this song to this context, and she chose the song. And so she's my practice involves not just myself; it involves a community, I guess. Very cliche as a Pacific person, but it does really involve a lot of people. And so my mother is heavily involved in this PhD writing and also my practice, where she's she's the advisor and still a mentor to me in terms of making my works. And so I've asked her to pick a song in context of this issue with her land ownership and hala whakaete.
Yeah, when I was reading through it, it was just the most beautiful lyrics that come through. Shall I read us a few?
Yeah.
Goes light in Pākehā of light, light of the shining sun shining on the bud, cuddle the love forbidden to be taken, my memory and longing to tiptoe path when the moon rising, comparing the planets of celestial sphere, talking gracefully for a dot in the ocean, a millibar that is unique, clear sky and the dawn break, eagerly ready are the birds. They are seeking over the Nui Tau area and landed on the Whanga Tuku Rolo. Stunning.
Yeah, the Tonga language is quite unique. I'm sure in Te Reo as well. They speak in metaphors, and so it's quite hard to translate into Palangi or Pākehā English. And so it was very difficult to find the words, because words mean deeper things. And so they speak very old English, or and so that's the best way I could describe it. And so it was really, we took ages to translate this, to make sense in the English context. But it waters it down. It means more. And probably if we translate it into Tongan and Te Reo, it might be a more better translation than to Tongan and English, in the sense that we all speak metaphorically. I've related it. It's a love story. It's a love song. But I relate it in the context of love to whenua, or our land, or the land. And my mother chose it. And so in terms of her offer or araha to the whenua that she experienced in her young days of growing up. And so I've kind of related to that context. even though it's about two people, this one's about two, my mother and the whenua that she grew up on. Yeah. And so those are the two brothers who will end up claiming or owning the land. She's second eldest. She's the eldest, Dalfa. It's a very foreign thing, like land ownership. It's not really a thing in Tonga. It's like, I like the term belonging. It's different because I belong to the spot. I belong to the space. Sounds much better than I own the space. So it's, and that's the language between, you know, in Tongan. That's how we say, that's how we talk about being part of an area or space, is that we are from. It's not we claim. It's the other way around. And this registration or the deed underneath, the language around it, it's all, I claim land, I claim, or I've claimed this, this is mine. But that's never the case. Yeah, that rule, yeah, that law, that law came out through Western context. When they wrote the policies around land ownership with the influence of, you know, English, and they applied it to the Tongan. And this is my critique about Tonga, is that they love to just leave things the way they are and not renew policies, laws, in context of the now or current. And so it still exists. And there was a time where it's called the Sea Door Law, where part of that policy was give ownership to female. And the people, or certain people, didn't like that law and threw a protest, and it ended up not going through. They're still trying to change it through the UN avenues. And so it's still, they're still trying to, yeah, still developing. And hopefully sometime soon, that law changes.
Moving over to the Honolulu Biennial, there was a second work that accompanied, if I'm got it right, which is concrete.
Concrete is as concrete does it. It's extracted from, or it's, the title comes from a Brian Masumi text, which I can't remember. I haven't read it in ages. But my primary supervisor at the time, again, titles, I don't title my works. It's usually titled by people that I have these conversations or experiences with. And so my PhD supervisor, Andy Thompson, titled that work. After seeing the work, he applied the concrete as concrete does it from Brian Masumi. But the work is in response to, again, in Hawaii, I met an older gentleman, poet, activist, artist, and military, used to be in the Vietnam, what do you call him?
War veteran?
Veteran, yeah. Imaikalani Kalahele. And he took me around to his studio and I just spent the day with him. We smoked weed. And that's usually what, for me, in terms of like, when I have conversations or when I do talanoa with people, I kind of surrender myself to their activities. And you know, we end up doing things like smoking weed and just having a talk about issues around in Hawaii. And so he mentioned this kind of throwaway term, but it stuck with me. And so, like, what are we going to do with the rubbish? In his Hawaiian accent, I'm not going to do it. But it sounded, you know, I thought, yo, that's quite interesting. But it wasn't, he alluded to the ongoing rubbish or the ongoing development of Waikiki or Honolulu in general and the crap they were making in terms of the development. And so I kind of used it as a way of making work. And so again, going back home to Aotearoa and position this experience from that context. And this is in Maungarei or Mount Wellington. I live in this, or my mother's land or whatever, owner's land thingy. She lives in that space. And so I've grew up there. And behind it is Stonefields. Does anyone know what Stonefields? It used to be a quarry. And right next to the quarry, or right next to Stonefields, is similar to Ihumatau, these old ancient stone garden, rock gardens. And it's very small. But I just like imagine it before they made it into a quarry. It would have been bigger than what it was now. But Stonefields is a new development. And it's close to GI Pamua area. And it's this, yeah, kind of Tim Burton type of setting. And all these houses with the same stuff, same everything, all kind of matched. And so that's what's in the background. A friend, Matawai Taulangau, who's another artist, Tongan artist, I asked him if we'd make this work. And the work is about creating these barriers between whenua and ourselves and using these kind of concrete rubbish. And we've kind of tracked ourselves going through the landscape of Mount Wellington or Maungarei. And I've used a reference, Colin McCann's six-day painting. Not a big fan of his paintings, but a big fan of the stories behind the painting and his journey to work through that painting. And so I formatted it in that way. And so you see us, at the beginning of the work, you'll hear the sound of these cobblestones just banging together. And then you'll realize these two figures moving across the landscape in Maungarei, tracking out. And then tracking along across the screen, and they'll exit the screen and enter another screen, but gets closer and closer and closer. And then this is the last screen where you see, oh, that's what they're doing. And so you see us tracking across. And it's 32 minutes. And you need patience to view most my works. You need patience to even like sit and experience my practice. But that's intentional. And so it's in reference to I mai kalahele, or I mai kalahele, and his throwaway term around what are we going to do with the rubbish, in reference to the Waikiki development, or the ongoing development of Waikiki in Honolulu. And I made this work. Oh, it plays? I took a whole day of filming this. And we didn't coordinate. It wasn't intentional, the clothes that we were wearing. I was like, just bring working clothes. And this is my working clothes. And he came in the same. I was like, oh. That's another aspect, is working with others. People have different directions, and them surrendering themselves or themselves into my kind of chaotic thinking. And it works out. But it's interesting. It adds to the work. But yeah, it's a whole day, and that's through. And you can see the background stone fields. In the corner there, on the left, in the background, that's where the rock, or the ancient, what do they call it? It's an archaeological site. But it's still called ancient Polynesian something, rock gardens. I was like, oh. It's these rock mounds. And it was a way of keeping the whenua warm. And that was a strategy, was to put those rocks in the mound. That's what the rock gardens. The reason why it was black and white is because the sun kept on coming in and out, and it will flux the colors were just, it was hard to control, and so we used black and white. Is there any questions? Yeah, it was. I guess in terms of like the idea, sometimes recording it is a better way of formatting a particular, like through post-production, to format in reference to an issue or an idea or something that I've live performance, I rarely do, and when I do, it's a very different approach in terms of mindset. It's just two mediums I get to work with. There's no favorite. I enjoy the both, but I do like having to edit things to suit a particular idea in terms of what the work is about or what issue it's talking about. Yeah.
Tēnā koe, thank you so much. It was amazing to learn a bit about your works and sit here beside you this morning on a Saturday morning, so tēnā koe. Yeah. I think between thinking about the synergies between both yours and Denika's work, they are both deeply personal and intimate, and it really struck a chord with me. I think about this housing thing and to see your family houses, to look at your work, John, think about your mother and your grandfather. I think if I'm thinking about the power of art and what we can do as human beings, and I look through both your guys' works and your personal stories, that's really the aroha that changes something inside of me. So once again, thank you for coming in this morning, everyone. Please stay after the talk and spend some time with the other works and new commissions. If you are in Wellington and Te Whanganui o Tata, you can also see the works in Joy Contemporary Art Gallery. So, kia ora. Yeah.